The Haunted Heart of America. We are going to talk about some incredible haunted mysteries in a moment with Logan Corelli. So don't touch your dial. Next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Logan Corelli with us has been investigating the paranormal for almost two decades, holding a PhD in parapsychology and a doctorate in metaphysics. He has been involved with the filming of the television Animal Planet show, The Haunted, as well as the show Ghosts and Legends of Oklahoma. Logan has spent years holding conventions and lectures to educate the public as well and raise some funds to preserve and save historic locations. He's the host of Paranormal America, which is a television show currently in production. His book that we're talking about tonight, The Haunted Heart of America. Logan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on tonight.
You sound like you have been in all facets of the paranormal. How'd you get started?
Well, actually, I guess you could say the interest stemmed from my very first experience when I was a child. And I was 8 years old, and I was actually coming back from a family vacation and had stopped in at a lodge for the night to, have another day vacationing. And we just happened to have, the most profound paranormal experience that any of us had ever experienced. So, it kind of stayed with me for a long time, and I had a lot of interest with the unexplained and supernatural, and, over the course of the years did a lot of research and studying and the TV shows and everything, and I just decided that I was going to go out and search for answers. And I've been doing that for quite a while now, and I've been to a lot of locations and have had a lot of experiences, so that's kind of how it got started.
And Logan, what have you concluded about some of these paranormal hotspots that we're going to talk about tonight and the field of paranormal investigating in general? What have you concluded about that?
Well, definitely, the phenomenon is legitimate. As far as, what specifically it is, what it consists of, I believe that's still a mystery. There's a lot of areas of the paranormal that's equally fascinating and frightening to a lot of people. But it's very unpredictable, in going out in places and being there numerous times under numerous circumstances, you really never know what's going to happen or really know what to expect. So I think being prepared and being aware of where you're at and having everything that you're utilizing for investigation is very important. But as I said before, I've been to a lot of places and had a lot of fascinating experiences, and it's just kept me going, and I think it'll keep me going for a long time in the future.
I think so, too. And you seem to enjoy doing this as well, which is important.
Yes, very much. I'm very passionate about it.
Let's talk about the Haunted Heart of America. How did you go about finding the locations that you investigated and wrote about?
Well, the earlier investigations, the local ones to me here, I had either found about through word of mouth, through people who had had stories and experiences out there themselves, or I had had a couple of books that were written that had locations in different states and things like that. So I had kind of pursued that as a potential lead to investigate. And, when I had started out, there really wasn't a lot of paranormal networking here. The TV shows had not spawned yet, and there was just not a lot of references and things to fall back on. So, you're going into a lot of cemeteries and abandoned locations and referrals from people who, think their house is haunted and things of that nature. So really, a lot of the earlier experiences were local sites, places that had been reported to be haunted for years, and I decided those were probably the best places to start and kind of conduct research on.
What do you think creates the haunted activity at some of these places?
Well, specifically, I really couldn't tell you. I know a lot of people believe that, you know, deaths and violent deaths and trauma and things like that can actually create hauntings. And there's a lot of theories as far as hauntings that can be brought into a location, either through an individual or an object or something like that, that can create a haunting. And other people believe that, you know, the elements have to be right, you know, weather and location and burials and things of that nature that can actually do it. And I don't think there's anything really conclusive, because there's a lot of things, you know, that happen that could or could not contribute to a haunting. But it's definitely out there. It definitely does exist. And again, like I said, just at this time, we don't know. We don't know what those elements are that really makes it up or causes it, if you want to say that.
When you investigate, do you go out with a team or are you by yourself?
Normally, I almost always have a group with me. I started out solo for a while. I had a friend that had gone with me, and I had formed a team almost 15 years ago, my first team, and I had cycled through a few more since then. But right now, I have a small group of colleagues that I've been working with for a very long time, and they're very well put together. They're very educated and good people to investigate with. So I primarily work with them and some guest investigators on occasion.
Have you ever gotten to a point where you felt that your life or safety was in jeopardy?
Well, yes and no. You know, going out to places, more particular abandoned locations, there's always a risk of danger from people that can be out there, or wild animals and things like that. So that's definitely a safety concern. But in the spiritual sense, I've never really felt that. I've been afraid. I've had the fear put in me before, but I don't really know so much that I was in fear of potentially dying of something. But I did have one instance where I was physically attacked and knocked literally off my feet, and I did have a concern for my colleagues at that point, because I think that kind of breaks a threshold to where you really don't know what's possible at that point and what's going to happen next. And you know, the one thing I tell people that talk to me about investigations and going out is that, above all, you know, safety is number one. And, you know, I always tell people, never put yourself in a position to where, you know, you may be in danger, or if you feel that way, you know, you always need to leave. But, you know, there has only been the one location, like I said, where I had felt something physical, and you know, I was concerned and had bruised, as a matter of fact.
What happened to you there?
Well,
did you instigate it because you were there? I mean, did you disrupt that spirit or something?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I wrote about this place in my book. Basically, it was an abandoned church, and we were warned not to go there by the spirits that inhabit that structure. We had gone out previously, the first time we had ever stepped foot in there, as a matter of fact, and there were three of us, and we were walking around, and we were kind of taking photographs and kind of getting a feel for the layout of the place, and you know, kind of just doing like reconnaissance, if you will, and so we can go back and make a plan to come back and investigate. So we really weren't out there all that long, but we were running audio from the audio recorder, and we had left. We weren't there an awful long time, but as we were coming back, one of the investigators started listening to the audio, and the first voice that we had caught had said, "You shouldn't be here." And he thought that was interesting. He pointed that out, and a little bit later, the voice had re-manifested, and it said, "You shouldn't be here, or you're going to die."
Oh, jeez.
And
just what you want to hear, right?
Right. You know. And so, yeah. You know, could it have been something trying to scare us away? Yeah, possibly. I really didn't think it was anything of a violent or threatening physical nature at that point. I just said, well, you know, I've had, you know, EVPs that said, you know, I'm going to get you tomorrow, and, you know, things of that nature. And I kind of took it as a, you know, okay, we'll see. I'll come back, and, you know, things would happen and things like that. But there really wasn't an overall concern of safety at that point. So we had rescheduled, and what had happened was we ended up going back out there, and there was about six of us this time, and two of my investigators had to wait in the car because one of them became violently ill.
Hmm.
on the property once they had stepped onto the property, and the other one was really scared. And so I told him, you know, wait in the vehicle and we would go in. And you know, I really hadn't didn't have any concern. And then we were walking along the floor of the church, and there's a basement area that actually leads down to a basement that goes directly under the altar area there in the front. And I start hearing some noises coming from the basement, and my first initial reaction was, you know, it's probably like an animal or something crawling around in there. And, you know, I didn't automatically, you know, feel it was anything paranormal at the time. And so I shined my light down there, and I was kind of leaned forward, kind of hunched down, mm-hmm. to see if I could see anything, you know, walking or moving or anything like that. And all of a sudden, this huge, like, almost like a big gust of wind had come out from the stairwell, and of course something hit me so hard on my right shoulder that it went back about 6 feet off of my feet and had caught myself and had landed. And my colleague that was alongside of me, you know, because I kind of froze because I really didn't know what had just happened. And I asked him, I said, did you see what had happened? And he said, yes. And I said, did you see what it was? And he said, no. And we kind of got into this little discussion. And I said, look, I said, whatever it was had hit me with a force. I said, I didn't, like, jump back. I didn't, you know, I wasn't trying to make up something. And he said, well, I know that, you know, you didn't do it because of the way that your legs were. You couldn't have jumped backwards like that from the way, you know, that I was standing and things, or crouched forward or whatever. And so we kind of thought that was strange, and we decided to continue. And we started walking around some more, and I got over to the area. I was looking outside, and I noticed that the dome light in my car was on, and I saw the two investigators in there. They were kind of moving around and things, and so I kind of focused in on them to see what they were doing. And my focus kind of went toward the left of the car, which would have been the driver's side, and I noticed there was a small, slightly higher than waist-high, little black figure that was, like, peering in the window to them.
Jeez.
And I was kind of moving around to see if maybe I was seeing a shadow that was, you know, somehow angled a certain way or whatever, and this, whatever it was, this thing had kind of turned around and saw me looking at it, and it was gone just that quick. And so I had, of course, told the investigators about that, and we kind of wrapped up after that and had got home. But I did have what appeared to be a small bruise about the size of maybe a golf ball or so that was on there. And we had gone back several times after that. Believe it or not, everybody was, you know, saying, why would you go back? You know, all this stuff had happened. And We had a whole lot of different experiences, and the one thing that was really bizarre about that place, and you know, I don't really have any evidence to support this, but I do believe it. I think every time we went out there with somebody new, somebody that had never been there before, it was almost like they were showing off, mm-hmm. or they were trying to make an impression, or, you know, something would happen. If we kind of went back, you know, with the usual people, we didn't always have something that, you know, it wasn't really, really active. You know, we might hear some noises or see a few things. So, you know, and again, that wasn't conclusive, but that was just kind of the way it had appeared. Got a lot of evidence out of there. It was a very interesting place.
Logan, have you changed your techniques over the years?
Well, I don't know so much as far as techniques. I have kind of come into like a method of kind of going in and investigating. And of course, you know, over the years with all of the development of the equipment and the things that we have to document, you know, things have become a lot easier and a lot more, a lot more better to use for the, equipment and things of that nature. So I guess as you get more comfortable, you kind of fall into your own methodology and your own way of doing things. And like I said, you know, there's no real predictable way to know what's going to happen when. So you can't say doing one thing in this place is going to be effective in another or at a different time, because it may not be. Basically, just... you know, what we do is the number one thing is we cover all of the areas. We try to establish communication if at all possible. And, you know, it's like leave no stone unturned. So a lot of the times, you know, you go out, you don't have a lot of evidence. And a lot of the times you go out and you have a lot of evidence. And, you know, nothing ever really... I guess surprises you with some of the things that you can come up with. And you know, I think, you know, trying to find the answers for those things is almost just as hard as catching it. So you know,
have you ever had some kind of entity follow you?
Yes, actually I have, several, in fact.
Oh boy. Like you brought them home?
Yes. Yeah, and at one time, my house was almost as haunted as the places I was investigating.
Jeez.
And I don't know
because that they followed you there.
Some of it could have been. I've always talked to people about spirit conflict, where, you know, if you have something following you and you go to another place that has something there, and they kind of, you know, interact or whatever. But yes, I have had. Multiple things follow me home and other places and restaurants. I had a manifestation that had come about as a noise, and this thing followed me around for about 6 months. And when I say followed me around, it didn't just follow me home. It followed me to work. It followed me to restaurants. It followed me in public. I'd be standing at a checkout counter, and this noise would just manifest, and everybody would look around and go, "What was that noise?"
They all heard it too, huh?
Yes, everybody heard it. Whoa. And I didn't say anything. I was just, you know, I'd kind of play it off and, oh, yeah, I heard it. You know, I don't know. But the ones who knew me and the ones that were around me a lot, they knew what it was. And a lot of them were scared because they were saying, okay, well, if it can follow him, it can follow me. And
that's
I don't
right.
want this thing following me at home. And, you know, and then it wasn't so much that it was just the noise. There were other physical things that were happening.
Hold on, Logan. Let's get right into that when we come back. Logan Corelli with us, the Haunted Heart of America. And we are back with Logan Corelli. We're talking about his work, The Haunted Heart of America. And Logan, you were telling us about how you have been followed home by some of these entities.
Yes, several, in fact. But I believe the one we were discussing was the noise manifestation. That
At a supermarket or something. Huh?
Well, we had nicknamed Wessler, but yes, in anywhere I go, this noise would manifest. And I had gotten a recording of it, you know, for the first time on a case that I was doing, and it started becoming more and more frequent. And one such instance, I was out late with a colleague at a fast food place, and we had gone in to eat, and the noise had manifested, and the guy at the counter was asking about it. We were telling him and what it was, and I guess he didn't believe us. So I went to sat down at a table, and all of a sudden, underneath the table, it got really, really cold, and I had felt this like pressure around my legs, as if, you know, something was locked onto me there. And, you know, someone had told me, it was a psychic or a medium or somebody that said they felt that this was a child presence that had attached me from a location. So I thought it was really interesting, and I called my colleague over at the table, and, you know, he'd asked what was going on, and I said, you know, underneath this table, I think someone's under here. You know, it's got really cold, and he had put his hand under the table, and, you know, he said, it is extremely freezing under there. And it got so cold that the top of the table was actually starting to gather moisture in the center of the table. And so he called the guy that that had worked the front counter over and tried to get him. He wanted nothing to do with it. They ran to the back. They were, like, scared to death, thinking we were bringing stuff into their place. And so we had sat there, and we had ended up leaving. Well, what this presence would do every time the noise would manifest, it would untie my shoes, or my shoes would just happen to be untied. So it was like no fail. Every time I heard that, I could look down and my shoes would be untied. So it was really interesting. And after, like I said, about, you know, 6 months, it just kind of, you know, had gone away. And I have yet to hear it to this day. But, you know, being at the house, I had a lot of experiences from other spirits and things that had come through, and more particularly the one cemetery that we went to quite frequently. I don't know why we always seem to bring something back, and it wasn't just me. It was other colleagues, too. They would say they would go home, and, you know, their lights would be going on and off, or they would hear, like, someone opening a door and those types of things coming back from there. So I don't know particularly what it was about that place, but one such instance, I had come back there from there late one night. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'd come in, you know, through the garage to go into the kitchen, and I went in, and my car alarm had went off. And my first impression was, oh, I must have hit the button in my pocket. So I took it out, and I reset it and walked in, and it went off again. And went back out and, you know, made sure no one was actually trying to mess with my car, and went back in and went off again. So I went back out, and I kind of gave a talk to whomever was there, and you know, told them I wasn't coming back. And that was kind of the end of that for the night. And I guess they were a little perturbed by that. And so I woke up the next morning, and I was getting ready, doing my daily routine, and I was getting ready to leave. And I noticed that my keys were not in my pocket. And so I was like, well, maybe I set them on the table. Maybe they, you know, fell on the floor. Or, you know, I'm looking all over for these keys. So after about, you know, 20 minutes or however long of searching, I decided that I would try and see if I could get in the glove box, because there was, you know, another way to, you know, open the car and get the key from there, get a key in there. And when I had gotten out in the garage, I discovered not only was my car locked and set, but my keys were sitting on the passenger seat of my car. And so I thought that was really strange. I had to call a locksmith to come and get my keys. But there were all sorts of different things like that, and experiences of different things that had happened, and it wasn't just me. You know, my mother had stayed with me for a while, and you know, she had woke up on the couch to see a man standing through the coffee table staring into space, and she described him in detail, and she had said that his shirt looked as if it had dirt, like he was like buried in it, you know, like he had been buried or something. So, you know, I don't know. These were all short-term things, except for the noise, which I said was about 6 months, but never had anything from attachments that were really, I would say, negative in a way. Just, you know, it's one of the things that you know, you do risk. It doesn't happen a lot, but it's something.
But it does happen.
Happen on occasion that you go out, and I don't think it's always a bad thing. You know, I mean, I think that they like the attention, and they don't get a lot of attention. Most people scream and run from ghosts and things, and it's kind of comforting to have somebody that wants to communicate with you and wants to talk to you and wants to know, you know, who you are and why you're there and those type of things. So I think showing an interest is really a positive thing, and, you know, I don't know really what their limitations are as far as what they can do and you know, communicate and things of that nature. But you know, I've never really taken it as something that was bad. And like I said, most of the time it was short-lived, and it was just another thing that had happened. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things in your house. You really don't know who to blame because you really don't know who was there at the time. So you know, I had good times with it, and I just recently had inherited another spirit in my house just this past week. So,
and you don't mind that they're there? It sounds
not at all. No, not at all. I'm really kind of excited, in the sense of, like I said, it's very unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen. I know a lot of people kind of feel uncomfortable, like they're, you know, someone's watching them all the time, and you know, they can't see anything and they don't know if they're there, and so, you know, some people see it as, I guess, a level of being uncomfortable, but I never really took it that way, you know. And the way I just kind of justify it is, you know, I've been doing this hundreds and hundreds of times and places, and I'm going out, and as long as there's not an immediate threat there to me or someone there at my house or whatever, you know, I'm fine with it. And I tell people that come into the house, not really so much anymore, but people that would come and visit, and, you know, they'd come out of the bathroom and they would say, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm crazy, but I think the toilet flushed a second time, or I think this had happened, or, you know, the blinds, you know, closed on their own, or you know, just those types of things. And, you know, I kind of tell them, well, you know, it's, those things do happen, but, you know, it's nothing to be concerned with or worried about. And it's just one of those things, you know.
What about objects that seem to pick up attachments?
Yeah, I did do an extensive study with that. I had done a few residential cases where the target, I guess, of the activity seemed to be an object or something like, you know, something like that. And I decided to take a few of those objects home with me so I could study them and kind of do experimentation and, you know, observation and see if anything would really happen. And the two things that had really stood out was the one was a toy truck that we had gotten at a residential case, and it belonged to one of the children of the home, and the mother had reported that this toy was going off in the middle of the night and would scare the kid, and you know, it'd be across the room and it'd be going off, and so she had removed the batteries thinking that would, you know, stop that, and the truck was still activating and going off, and you know, it made kind of like a noise when it would go off. It would, you know, go rrr, and it was a monster truck. And so, you know, I had asked her, I said, well, I'm very interested, you know, in this toy. I said, would you mind if I took it with me? And she was like, oh, yeah, you can have it. I don't want it in the house no more. So I said, okay, and I took the thing home and, I kind of, set it up and recorded it and, did some readings and poked it and did all these different things. And it just wasn't doing anything. So I decided at one point that I was going to try and put it, the truck, in another environment to see if there was a reaction. Maybe my house just wasn't doing it for the truck. So I ended up putting the truck in the back trunk of the car. And long story short, I more or less kind of forgot about it. I really didn't do anything else with it at that point. And one day, I was going to cash a check, and I was in a parking lot of a store, and I was getting ready to go down to get onto the main road, and this truck busted through my back seat and went all the way up through the middle of the car. And landed in the passenger's floorboard and was going off and making noise. And, and I had to stop because it had scared me pretty good. And I'm looking at it, and I stopped, and I got the thing. And I was like, how did this thing, end up winding up? And who put batteries in it? And, I was just really confused at that point, but I was still a little worried. And I'd went and examined the truck, and sure enough, there were never any batteries in it. I mean, it was empty. The compartment was empty. And I think that really kind of bothered me, And but at the same time, I wanted to know, what else I could do with it. And so I called my colleague and called him on the phone. I said, hey, this truck just busted, basically through my seat, and, and it activated and all of this. And he said, well, just put it back, and whenever you get some time, see if you can set it up, and we can do more with it then. Well, that truck disappeared.
What do you mean it disappeared?
It
vanished?
It vanished. To this day, I don't know where that thing is. I don't know if it got mad at me and it drove off on its own and it's, going down a highway somewhere. I don't know. All I can tell you is it disappeared from my trunk and I never saw it again after that day. So was it stolen? Possibly. Did someone mistake it for trash and throw it away? Possibly. But, no one uses your car without you knowing about it. And most people, if I told them I had a possessed toy in the back of the truck or back of the trunk, they wouldn't touch it, let alone go near it. So that was that mystery. And then the second item, which I found to be quite frightening, was an antique clock that I had picked up from a residential investigation here locally. And the residents had found this clock in their attic when they had moved into the house. And, it's a fairly old little clock, and, they were kind of fond of it, and they had it up on the fireplace, and all this activity and things were going on in their house. And they kind of attributed the activity to, to the clock, and they were trying to make that connection. And so, again, I had asked, may I, take this clock with me and experiment with it? And they said, sure, yeah, no problem. So, we get the clock in the back of the car. It was like a Blazer type vehicle. And we're on our way. I'm on my way home, and we noticed this. At first, it kind of looked like a dog. But then as it got kind of closer to the road, it looked like it was too big to be a dog. It was like a long black animal. And it was running straight for the road. And as we had gone to the road, we kind of collided with this thing to where whatever it was, it hit the passenger door that I was happened to be laying on at the time. And, we had turned back to look, and the thing kind of shook its head and ran off. We thought that was bizarre. Don't know if it was paranormal. Don't know if it was related to the clock, but it was the beginning of a series of events that led to me, returning it, the clock. So I get the thing home, and I set it on my dresser, and I just kind of leave it there for went into the bathroom, my bedroom bathroom, and I started hearing like somebody was walking around in my bedroom. And I had the door closed, you know. So I'd open up the door, and nobody was there. So I was like, okay, strange, but whatever. Well, the next day, I had come home, and I came home for lunch, and I had a project I was working on the computer, my computer desk that was in my room, and I had made some sort of comment to the clock that was sitting there, not doing anything, and all of a sudden my door to my room started shaking violently, and that worried me. Because, you know, that made me think somebody was in my house. And so I went, because my door was locked. Mm-hmm. So I went and got my gun.
To get in, right?
And I go out and I start looking around the house and I start checking the windows and the doors, and everything's locked and no one's hiding in my house. And so I'm just kind of like, okay, that was strange. So then...
You're like a magnet, Logan.
Well, maybe. But I have the clock on the dresser, and again, you know, later in the evening, I'm going into the bathroom, and all of a sudden, I hear this noise, and I didn't really know what that was. Well, the clock had a glass door that latched and covered the front part of it, and what had happened was that door had become unlatched and flipped open and hit one of the bottles that was on my my cabinet, or on my dresser, rather. So I said, okay, you know, it's still strange, whatever, so I fixed it. Well, I decided that...
Hold on for a second, Logan. We're already at the top of the hour, fast hour indeed. We'll talk more about your work, The Haunted Heart of America, and we'll open up the phone lines, questions, and also your own ghost stories next.